Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi there, and welcome to another episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. I'm your host, Lois Strachan, and today we have two very special guests, two people I've been looking forward to interviewing for a long time. They are both puppy raisers for the South African Guide Dogs Association for the Blind. It's Tanya and Wendy, and they'll be talking to us today about what it is to be a puppy raiser, what they have to do, a little bit about some of their experiences with the dogs that they've helped to raise to become guide dogs, and possibly those who haven't grown up to be guide dogs. We'll see how the conversation goes. Wendy and Tanya, it is so great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Only a pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, we're loving to be part of this, especially since we know you and have known some of your dogs.
Yes.
That also does really help, doesn't it? Okay, so where I want to start is by asking you just to introduce yourselves formally. And just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do in your spare time when you're not busy raising puppies for the Guide Dog Association. Wendy, can we start with you on this one?
Yeah, sure. My name is Wendy Purden. I'm on my third puppy for Guide Dogs South Africa. And before I was a puppy raiser, I worked with Labrador Rescue because I've always been a Labrador person. I've raised 14 labs, but I know the breed and I love the breed. And it was just like the easiest thing for me to slip into, even though I didn't have much of a choice once I met Tanya and guide dogs. But it's, yeah. And in my spare time, when I don't have a dog at my feet or my side, I work twofold, one for my partner's business, which is a building company. And then I also work for Able Tours, which is a company that does hiking and biking in Cape Town for mainly high-end foreign tourists.
Great. Thank you. Tanya, how about you?
Okay. So I'm Tanya Robertson. When I started puppy raising, I had a house full of children, but I was looking ahead at the empty nest looming. It wasn't quite looming as rapidly as I thought, because kids don't leave home at 18, which is maybe not a bad thing. For me, it was about, okay, so I need to put something in place to mitigate that. I'm a marriage counselor. I have been for 30 years. I do marriage, individual, joint, couple counseling. So I do a variety of counseling. So I spend a lot of time talking to people. I spend a lot of time problem solving, and I spend a lot of time listening. But it's quite a sedentary, stationary thing. So I'm either sitting online or I'm sitting in person talking to people. And puppy raising has definitely been a space of doing something completely different, completely outside of what I know. I'm also a photographer, and that's just, I mean, there's nothing cuter than puppies to photograph, so that's the other appeal on it. But yeah, I live in the marina, we've got a lovely community of puppy raisers around us. And I'm married. I have three children, three boys. Interestingly enough, my oldest son has now started to investigate, because they've moved to the UK, and they're starting to investigate whether they can puppy raise in the UK, which is really special. I thought, oh, that's so nice. There's a legacy developing. So that's very special.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you both. It's great to hear a little bit about what you're doing when you're not looking after puppies. But let's now start talking about our little cute bundles of energy, because I'm sure that's what they are for some of the time. Tell us about the dogs you've each raised for the Guide Dog Association. Should we start with you again, Wendy?
My first one was a girl, a female, called Elva. And that she was born in 2019. And then I raised another little girl who was actually half sister to Elva, called Yale. So she was born in 2021. And then I got Caleb 3 weeks ago, who was born in 2023. So he's only just 10 weeks old. He's still quite young, very, very baby. And that's a little black Labrador male. So two girls and a boy.
Sweet. And Tanya, from your side, tell us about the pups that you've raised.
I have a slightly more complicated history. I'm on dog number 7. And I think I'm going to work it backwards. So Rico, I don't know when they were born. I could tell you, but that's a little bit like I can't remember. So Rico's probably about, he's about
exactly a year older than Caleb.
Okay, there we go. That's it. They actually are born on the same day, but a year apart, which is really cute.
Yeah.
So Rico's a blonde Labrador. He's only just grown out of puppy brain. I love him to bits. He keeps coming in here and putting his chin on my knee while we're talking because he wants the attention. He's got a sibling who's also in the marina called Rudy. We'll explain the why they named what they are just now, if you like. So I've got him. He's kind of, about 14 months. Before him, I had a dog called Gladys, who was named, not named for Gladys Evans, but that's kind of what it became. She was a sponsored dog. She has gone to a lady who lives now in Pinelands. She was a handful to raise because she had elbow issues with both of her elbows. So we ended up with operations for Africa and crating because of recovery. That's where puppy raising gets to be a complete nightmare, is when you have dogs with issues. And it's part and parcel of the territory that you don't know what's going to happen. So you do that, you raise them. Then before her, I had Onyx, who was a black female. She is living now she has an owner who lives in Worcester, and they work beautifully together. They are, in fact, both Onyx and Gladys have gone to ladies that they both like their dogs. The dog and the person have become one. It's so funny to watch. They walk the same. Their personalities are the same. Boosie paints Gladys's toenails to match her own. Sinette and Onyx walk through the shopping center, and there's a stop at the Biltong shop. They are beautiful, beautiful partnerships. Onyx is much more of a straightforward dog. She walked very slowly. She still does. But she was a much more straightforward dog. I forgot Yasmin. Yasmin was the one that in between my current one and Gladys. Yasmin's gotta be top dog of the party. She's the one who keeps everybody in order, but she's also a complete and utter hooligan. So it went Rico, Yasmin, Gladys, Onyx, and then before Onyx, I ended up with another dog that I didn't have as a puppy, and it was Yasmin's sister, Yentl, but she came from Joburg, so I count her as one of my dogs. So I had her for about a year while she was in training. And then before Onyx, I had Milan, who was my first full puppy to raise. I had one before him, but I'll explain that just now. Milan, Cheryl always referred to him as a rugby prop. He was like this huge bundle of energy that would just bound through life. And he and his owner are one. He's got an owner in Worcester, and Hector and Milan bound through life. They break all the rules. They are a perfect partnership, and they are a bit of a handful, both of them. But the most amazing personalities and nature. And then my very first puppy that I ever had was a dog called Nugget, who arrived in my arms at 8 weeks old. He was the most beautiful blonde. He was named Nugget because of a gold nugget, because that's the color of his fur, also a sponsored dog. And unfortunately, he had an anaphylactic response to the second set of vaccinations, and we just couldn't save him. So it was actually traumatic in the extreme. I can't believe I came back into puppy raising after that, but I almost had to. He was such a, you know, you bond so quickly with a puppy. I think I only had him a month, 6 weeks maybe. By 6 weeks, they're part of, Wendy will tell you, by the time they've been in your house 6 weeks, they are part of the furniture and part of your heart. So that's why I count him as one of my puppies, because that was probably the most traumatic journey I've ever had.
I can imagine. And as you say, I mean, with that as a start, to have then gone on and repeated the process, not a second time or even a third time, but multiple times. And okay, there's one thing that I just wanted to check in about. So you've told us about all of the people that they are partnered with, the dogs that have gone through, with the exception of Yasmin. And I've met Yasmin. Yasmin has a particular perspective on being a guide dog. Can you just give us a little bit of background on that?
Oh, my Yazzie girl. Oh, she has got such a full personality. She is, we right from the beginning, it was Yasmin, Yael, and Yentl were all sisters. There was more in the litter than that. But from the beginning, we have a puppy raiser page on Facebook. And from the beginning, the XYs, because that's the litter, were always on the tabletops, on the counters, eating food. They were a nightmare. And we could see it because all the puppy raisers were posting the same kind of photographs. She has what Wendy and I call, because Yael has it as well, a squinty bitch face, which means that she'll look at you and you can see there is judgment written all over her face about who you are and what you're asking her to do and why she really thinks there's absolutely no way on this planet she should be doing whatever it is you're telling her to do. So she didn't make it as a guide dog because she has zero work ethic.
She actually chose not to, though. Let's be fair. She chose. Nobody forced her. She chose not to work for a living.
Yeah.
Because she looked at this process and she went, why would you do this if you don't have to? If you can lie on the couch all day and have a whole family at your beck and call, why would you work? And to be fair, that's exactly what she does. She has a whole family at her beck and call. I have told her that she doesn't really like puppies in the beginning, but I told her one of the penances for not making it as a guide dog was that she had to then train puppies properly in my house for the rest of her natural days. So that's what she does. I don't know if properly is the right word. Cheryl would disagree because she's a hooligan. So she does have an owner, but it's me.
Fair enough. And I think one of the reasons I asked you to clarify that one was because I want people to understand that, yes, there are some dogs that you work very hard to raise and then go into training, but dogs that maybe just, well, for whatever reason, they don't actually then become working guide dogs. And that is one of the realities of working and training dogs. And it's also good for people to understand that the dogs aren't forced to be guide dogs.
Never.
Can I just step in there? Because actually that is such an important thing. Yasmin made it very clear. So we worked, myself and her trainer, Megan, and Cheryl, we worked incredibly hard to get her to a point where she would be able to work, because that's the goal. That's what you want from a dog. You want them to be a working dog. There's all this time and energy and effort and money and all the rest of it invested in them. You want them to be matched with a partner, but you want them to be happy. You want them to be a good fit in that space. And it was, Yasmin made it very clear. She chose not to be a working dog. She chose to be a dog that got retired. She and literally you could see the last month of her training, she was just waiting for us to get round to that conclusion as thoroughly as she'd reached it.
Yeah, it's a very important point to make that it's not anything that's inherent perhaps in the litter. It just could happen because both of her sisters that were in Cape Town are working and both doing very different work, but doing it superbly. And Yasmin's doing her job superbly, which is lying on the couch. So it's part of the personality of the dogs. And what is so amazing is that it's recognized and it's accepted, and a dog will never be forced to be something that it's not. So for people who feel there are a lot of people with a lot of judgment, ashamed, these poor working dogs, they're forced to work so hard, and it's actually not true at all. If they don't want to be guide dogs, they're never forced to be guide dogs or service dogs or whatever. The ones that make it and are matched want to do that work, and they are so happy doing it to the point where Yael, Yasmin's sister, sorry, I'm jumping in, was very, very exactly the opposite. She could not wait to leave this house. She loves us. She will always be happy to see us, but she was bored out of her mind being a pet, and she could not wait to work, and she is working where she is now just because of the match being so perfect.
And I think it's important to understand that. So, you know, I'm really, really glad that you've made that point as clearly as you have, both of you. But I want to talk a little bit more about, I mean, I love talking about the dogs, don't get me wrong, but I want to talk a little bit more about the human part of puppy raising. What is it that you actually do as puppy raisers? Tanya, can we start with you in this one?
Yes, you can. That's a very good question. I think the key is consistency and training or growth. So the more the puppy is a part of your life, the more well trained they are to be part of somebody else's life. So that's the goal of a puppy raiser, is to pull that puppy in and walk alongside them and make sure that they walk alongside you in everything that you do. So if you're going shopping, the dog comes with you. If you're going to work, the dog comes with you. If you are visiting friends, the dog comes with you. We are going to Maynardville tonight, weather dependent. And I've already phoned them to ensure that it's okay. I mean, I always check beforehand because for something big like that, but Rico's coming with us. So he is going to get his dose of Shakespeare, and I'm really hoping he behaves himself. But that's what you do. You take the dog alongside you and you do everything that you would normally do with the dog, but you do it with a set of rules. The dog needs to behave like a civilized creature, not like a wild feral beast. So you've got to teach boundaries all the time, not allowed on the couch, make eye contact, connect, and it's done in love. It's not done in a punitive way. So your whole thing, the human side of it is take the puppy alongside and encourage all the time, a little bit like the way you raise children.
And I just add to that,
please do.
I see the role of a puppy raiser. We only have two jobs. It's not one, it's two, is to love the dog unconditionally, because if you love, then they are secure and happy. And the other one is to expose the dog to as much as possible so that when the training starts, the formal training, that they are loved and they are used to being out there. If you just keep the dog at home and do sit and stay and down, that is not what a guide dog is. We all know that, because very often they don't even have those basics. But it's all about being loved and being secure and being exposed to experiences, whether they be different places, different smells, different sounds, different noises, different whatever, so that they're not overwhelmed when they leave our homes. They're used to new things all the time and making choices.
And what ages do you really work with the dogs? What is that? I mean, you first get them, although from what it sounds like, it can differ quite widely, if I'm correct.
We get them at 8 weeks generally. Mm-hmm. between 8 and 10, depending on what happens at puppy block and depending on things like COVID and airports and so on. But it's sort of 8 to 10 weeks. And then they go into training anything from 18 months to 2 years, depending on the dog and depending on the backlog of guide dogs. Because, you know, in Cape Town, we can only train 10 dogs at a time. So we haven't got the big facilities that they have in Joburg. So if they're full there, then we hang on to the dogs longer. And if the dog is also a little bit sensitive or a little bit young or a little bit whatever, then again, you hold on to them for younger. But it's around, I personally think that, for example, that the current dog that Tanya's got now is ready, even though he's only over a year. He could start school. He's just that ready. But like Echo stayed longer. So there's different dogs that, that we just hold on to a little bit longer, just like kids starting school. You know, some of them are school ready and others you just need a little bit longer.
Great. Sometimes we do get them a little bit later if they've been puppy raised in Joburg. But if they are going to go to a Cape Town owner, they will be trained in Cape Town generally. Not always like that, but sometimes that is the way it works. And then as a puppy raiser, they might say to you, will you take over weekend care for X, Y, and Z? And that dog is normally sort of 16 months old.
Okay. I know raising a dog costs money. Is it a financial burden on you as puppy raisers? Just tell me how that all works.
And I have to speak first this time. It's not on me, but it is on Tanya because she spends all her money on her dogs.
That's unfortunately true. I have a collar fetish. Okay, that didn't sound right at all.
As a marriage counselor, that's not
my goodness.
To
okay.
Say.
I have a thing for dogs and their collars and pretty little and treats and that's bad news. But that's my choice. Yeah, Wendy's right. All our costs are covered. The food's covered, the vet bills. And I have to say, Cape Town staff are phenomenal. You can phone and message at any time of the day or night or the week or the weekend, and somebody will pick that message up and be available to you. So, yeah. I mean, I was walking on the beach with Rico not too long ago, and he picked up a pufferfish in his mouth. And there was an instant answer to my query, which was you take him to the nearest vet, you tell them, Wendy's just picked up Caleb. Oh, cute. You take him to the nearest vet and you tell them to send us the bill. Despite the fact that I was in Fishhook and the normal vet is in Rosmead Avenue. So all the costs are covered. There are a couple of hidden costs. And those are generally your partner's glasses, if he's not very careful with them, or headphones. The cell phones. Yes. If he lets them dangle anywhere near a puppy's teeth, and your furniture. Yasmin ate furniture. She was a complete nightmare. So I still have couches that have no arms.
Those are the hidden. They do tell you about it, though. They do warn you. They give you a disclaimer to sign to say that you know that this is going to happen. Basically, puppy and raising is not a walk in the park. It's lovely and it's wonderful and it's fun and you do amazing things, but it is not easy because you have to be on guard for the first 3 months all the time.
Yeah.
Having had 3 guide dogs and about 4 pet dogs, I hear you. We've lived through those puppy months and they can be quite not just fun and exciting, but quite expensive as well. So yeah, this and I'm glad that you also raised that as that's a reality of the job of puppy raising. So what are the skill sets that you think are important to become a puppy raiser from the human side? What kind of person do you need to be?
Must love dogs.
Fair point.
Patience.
Yeah. I also think, I agree with that. I also think you've got to have a heart for both people and dogs. because in the puppy raising world, you meet some absolutely phenomenal people. The staff at Guide Dogs are wonderful. Really, they are the most amazing team of people. But the other puppy raisers as well, because I think we all get drawn into it because we love dogs, and you've got to have a heart to give. It's an altruistic thing, because at the end of it, the dog is not yours. So you are doing it to give it away, because you recognize that that's important. So there has to be some kind of altruistic and heart for other people in the mix. So you meet the most amazing people. And it one of the things I've really cherished about puppy raising is that I've got this community of people around me who just are the most wonderful people in the world. They restore your faith in humankind all over again.
And that's really good to hear, because I'm sure in the experience of working with the puppies, particularly when they're young and when you're out and about, you probably also encounter some situations where people are maybe not as receptive.
Yes, very definitely. And I think you pick up a bit of criticism in the sense that, exactly as Wendy said, the people who go, oh, dogs shouldn't work and dogs should be doing this and my dog does this and why is your dog on a leash in this space and you should be able to let the dog run free. And so explaining the ethos behind puppy raising is really important. I have to say, oh, and then security. Oh, my goodness. You spend a lot of time fighting security at malls and security at shops and ignorance. It's basic ignorance around accessibility. The dog needs to be trained in this environment. We need access. It is a trained dog. It's not a pet. And trying to convince security that your dog is not a pet and should be allowed into clicks is hard.
So that's what I mean by patience. It's not for the dog. I meant patience for idiots who come up to you and say, can I give your dog a treat? And I'm like, first of all, the dog is wearing a jacket. It's not. And one of the things it says, do not distract. And you're asking me if you can feed it. It's the patience is actually to deal with the humans, not the dogs. The dogs are, you know, guide dogs and service dogs are a special breed. They are specially bred for purpose. They are purpose bred, and they're clever. They're very clever. So the patience needed is not really in training. Maybe if they've eaten your couch, yeah, you need some patience. But generally speaking, they react really well. But it's the people around us, not the fabulous people at Guide Dogs and the fabulous owners that they get and the fabulous people who raise funds for Guide Dogs. Those, not those people, the ignorant people. Those are the ones you need patience for.
And to be fair, not everyone is ignorant. There's a lot of acceptance and a lot of support and a lot of absolutely really generous people who look on to what is happening with the pups and the guide dogs that are actually out in the world and are incredibly good with them. So, yeah. But I think fair enough. There are a lot of people who don't understand that a guide dog is more than just a dog.
I think, Lois, that a lot of people in sort of poorer areas have not had the same chances at educational talks.
Exposure,
because things like, you know, getting dogs into taxis and getting dogs into townships, that's always where we run into more trouble than when you go, for example, to, you know, a hotel in Cape Town or Cape Town City Council. They're used to it then because the education has been ongoing for a long time. But it's still sort of the developing areas where we still have a lot to learn and to teach. And us as puppy raisers are also part of that educational process, because every time you're out with a dog, you're in the public eye. It's a bit like driving around with a bucky with your logo on it. You can't drive like an idiot because people can see. And it's the same with guide dogs. When you're out, you have to make sure your dogs are under control and that you're constantly training. You're not just dragging them around to get a free ride anywhere, that you're training and doing things with a purpose, because a lot of what we do is purpose driven.
sorry, I know you can't get a word in edgeways here, Lois, sorry. The other thing is that you asked what qualities you need as a puppy raiser. And I think you develop an ability to interact with the public on all sorts of different levels. If you have a puppy and you leave the house with a puppy in a guide dog jacket, sure as eggs are eggs, you are going to be asked by somebody, and not just one person, normally about five or six, at every step along the way. Tell me a little bit more. Oh, the puppy, what does that mean? Oh, your dog. Oh. So there are a million questions. And one of the things you need to do.
Carry on, Tanya. I have to. Caleb's got a CD in his mouth.
Oh, go for it. Okay. The joys of puppy raising. You can't do anything without an interruption. So one of the things you do have to do is to be realize you are an ambassador for guide dogs, and one of your jobs is to educate the public, to talk about how we give them up, to talk about how we train them, to talk about why this dog is in the public eye and why it's not okay to leave them at home. So that is part and parcel of your job. And, you know, I call myself an introvert, so it's not the easiest part of the job for me, but actually it's turned into a part I really love. I love the fact that I can interact with complete and utter strangers over a puppy.
Yeah, and it is one of the things that, I mean, as a guide dog user and a guide dog owner, I find that the dog is often a way to break down barriers that might otherwise exist. So it's good to know that's also similar to the experience of being a puppy raiser. I want to talk, you've mentioned a couple of times now, the point of giving up the dog, them moving on to their permanent partnerships. Isn't that really, really hard? And how do you navigate that process?
Mm-hmm. Different people will say different things. And I'm sure if you ask different puppy raisers, I know that the first one is always the hardest, because once you've done it once, you know with the second one what's coming and that you can, and you do it again. That doesn't make it easier. It just means that do you learn better coping mechanisms? When you get to number seven, like Tanya, I think you it's just a case of next. But
not quite.
No, I know that. I know how much you love them. I do think, though, that it's the way you approach it in the beginning and the language that you use. So, for example, I knew that I would bond with a Labrador because I do. I can't go into a township without coming back with a puppy. So, you know you're going to get this puppy, and you know that it's not yours. So that's exactly what it was for me for the first time. I knew that it was going to be hard. So the language I used from the beginning was, hello, little guide dog. You know, you are going to be a fantastic guide dog. So it wasn't like, oh, your mommy's here. You know, it's not like that. It's like, my purpose is to raise you to be an amazing member of society. And so you are just on loan to me. I adore you, but you're not mine. You never were mine, and you're going to the person that you were raised to go to. And that's kind of how I've seen all of mine. I adored all of them. I have never had a dog that I went, ooh, you know, can't wait for you to go. But you do develop this, you know, they get to a point where they're done with you, and that's okay with me. And when you see them again, oh, that's the best, because they are the happiest souls. They've now got their purpose person, and they've got their person who grew them up, and they're all together in one space, and the dog is so happy. And that's what we love. That's what we look forward to. We love seeing our dogs working. Tanya, would you agree?
Absolutely. I was going to say it's a little bit like raising kids who are strong and happy and healthy to walk into the world. It's exactly the same with the dogs. You are aware from the very start that this is not your dog, and you are there for a purpose, and your purpose is to raise the best dog that you possibly can. In order to do that, you have to lose a part of your heart, because you can't raise a dog in a kennel or without love. So you have to bond, you have to connect as if the dog is yours. But you know the dog isn't. And I think Wendy's 100% right. They get to a point where they're bored being in your house, and they get they want to work. I suppose I kind of they leave me behind. I'm there for that season of their lives, and then they grow beyond me because I can't be their owner. They can't have the kind of relationship with me that they will have with their owners. And that's what they are born and bred for and raised for. They are raised for that interdependent relationship, which I can't provide them with. So, yeah, that's the bottom line on it is you just get another one, which is how you land up being on puppy number seven.
One of the ways that came home to me was actually not with your first dog, because your first dog is like your first child. You make a whole lot of mistakes along the way. And even though the dog ends up being great and fine, you as a puppy raiser do things not quite. When you get the second one and then the third one and the fourth, it does get easier because you learn certain skills. And when I did the blindfolded walk with my second dog, and you can talk about that in a second, but I got the feeling from her that she was going, oh, for heaven's sakes, can you just not give me someone I can actually guide with? Because she knew that I wasn't blind. She'd been doing it for so long by the time I got to have the walk that she was like, oh, this is ridiculous. You could almost feel it in the way she would walk three steps and then look at me as if to say, oh, come on already. Because blind people are way more dependent on the dog than I would be, you know, because they have that bond with their dog, that trust that they and the dog build together, which we don't have because I'm trying to constantly tell her what to do, show her what to do, whatever, whereas once they're working, they don't have that.
Okay.
And it's... Did you know what I'm saying? I only realized it on the second dog that I was doing it all wrong.
I do hear that, but I have to just dig a little bit deeper into that experience of the blindfolded walk, because my sense would be that as a person who is very much dependent on your sight, you would be almost as dependent as a person training with a guide dog, a blind person training with a guide dog for the first time, that uncertainty, the uncertainty of what is all happening and how it's all going to work and the trust. And because, yes, you know the dog, but you're so used to having your own sight. That must be quite a challenging experience to do the blindfold walk.
It is. It really is. I'm sorry, I'm going to step in here because I've done one with each of my dogs, and it is a most terrifying experience, actually. It's a most, because you're suddenly reliant on an animal that you have raised. You know what that dog gets up to. I know how ADD Rico can be. I'm trading a blindfolded walk with him. And yet I know he's going to be a fantastic guide dog. So I can trust him for somebody else. But because I've got the background with him, I don't necessarily trust him for me, if that makes any sense. So it is. It's quite a freaky thing to do as a puppy raiser, not least of all because you know the dog, but because suddenly your sight, which you are primarily dependent on, goes away. I think Wendy's right. The dogs get a bit impatient with us because we are so hesitant. We think we know because we've seen it. We think we know what's on that in the road. And the walk we do with them is generally a walk we've done sighted a million times. But when you do it unsighted, it's a completely different experience. There are things that you just don't notice when you have your sight. So I think that's where the trust comes in, is that it's not just the dog. It's also the fact that I'm trying to remember what I've seen along this way, along this route. And I can't remember it quite as accurately as I thought I could. So it does add quite a complication to it.
Yeah. Okay, I hear you. I was just curious to compare that experience to what it's like, what I remember it being like doing those walks for the first time with a new dog. And you can see the, not the frustration, but the dog's enthusiasm is kind of, I know what I'm doing. why don't you just follow my lead? And I think as a new guide dog owner and partner, that is often quite hard to do. I just never thought about putting it in that context before. So interesting observation that.
Yes, it's a very good contrast, actually. And it is exactly that. So the dog gets frustrated with both of us.
And that is at least why the guide dog trainer is there to say to the dog, I'm still here and watching you. So that's part of the process. Yes.
Okay, it was quite interesting, though. It's just one thing that Megan, the trainer here in Cape Town, said to me at the time of the first, I think she said it twice to me, was trust the dog. She knows what to do. Yeah. And like Tanya said, I was thinking, yeah, but I know what she's about. But she did say to me, the reason that we bring people onto class is not to train the dogs. By that stage,
it's to train the humans. Yeah.
It's to train the humans to work with the dogs. And that's exactly what happens when we are, because we've been puppy raisers, but we haven't actually been, you know, blind partners of the dog. So we know one part of them, but we don't know how good they are until we see them working. So we haven't seen them working yet. We were just walking next to them completely blindfolded, with all our sight taken away, which we normally have, and just said, trust the dog. And that's where the issues come in.
Okay, so tell me, what do you each think is the best part of being a puppy raiser?
Oh, that's a big question.
It is.
One of the things I've been grateful for, and I've thought about this quite a lot in recent days, is that I have acquired a whole set of skills that I would never have had in a world that is completely separate from anything else I do. And I've acquired a whole community in that space. So funny enough, it's not even about the dogs necessarily. It's actually about a set of skills, and some of them are dog training skills. Some of them are people skills. Some of them are knowledge about me. I mean, there are moments when I'm walking with Rico and I know the issue isn't him acting out. The issue is me. And it's because whatever mood I'm in is passing down the leash because I'm not containing where I'm at well enough. So there's a level of self-awareness that develops, but it's a skill. There's a set of skills of understanding the animal world, yourself in that space that you wouldn't have otherwise. Knowledge about dog sicknesses, dog anatomy, dog operations, what can go wrong. Yep. And also, the community, the fact that you meet these absolutely incredible people, because if a dog trusts a person, you know they're good. So you tend to meet the best of the best all the way through, and you land up with this lovely relationship with them because the puppy's in your life 24/7 in the beginning. So those people pop in and out of your life all the time, which is, it's really special. So community skills and self-awareness. I think those are I've given you three.
That's quite fine. I didn't stipulate only one. Wendy, how about you from your side?
I still think that there's nothing nicer than getting a Labrador puppy. I mean, Charles, my partner, always says, it's a shame that blind people can't see how beautiful they are. And they are beautiful puppies. They come as, all puppies are cute, but Labrador puppies are, and Golden Retriever puppies, which are the two we use the most, are particularly gorgeous. And they smell divine, and they're cute, and they're playful, and they're clever. So I can't lie and say that's not part of it, because, to buy a dog like that would cost thousands. And we just get them, and get the privilege of raising them. And they are special. But for me, I think it's the fact that the reward of seeing, like Tanya said, it's like your child going off to varsity, getting qualified, and then finding the job and the partner of their dreams. And that's all you want from your kids. I've also got three children. So when your dog does the same, goes off to school, graduates, finds the person of their dreams, and then is happy and living a purposeful life, what more can you ask? It's like a legacy that you leave, that you've got these partnerships in life that are just amazing. And not just the people who sort of get a dog and then can go on to live an independent life and so on, but also to see their dog just living the life of frickin' Riley. You know, when I see the places that my dogs go, I get quite jealous. And the things they get to do, you know, I mean, I remember taking, I think it was Alva, on a on a boat at the waterfront and thinking, you know, some people never get this experience and I'm taking a dog. But I got the opportunity to go with a group of Sea Scouts on a boat. And I thought, well, I'll take Alva with you. Never know where she's, you know, going to end up. And it was really a good learning thing for her. It was great for the Sea Scouts. And I mean, it was a beautiful day. And you get to have all these wonderful experiences with your dog and see your dog just living the life of Riley. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Can I add to that and say that I think it's also the fact that you get to volunteer. There's something incredibly fulfilling about volunteering, but you volunteer in a way that gives almost as probably more. I think it gives more to me than I give to it. And that is a unique privilege to be able to volunteer in a space. So you're giving willingly of your time and energy, but you are getting back way more than you're putting in. And it's unique.
And you can do it from home and you don't have to go and stand, you know, shaking a tin or whatever other volunteers get to do. This one is for me, it's easier. Yes, it's harder in some ways with the giving over of the pup when it's older and blah, blah, blah. But it's on your terms as well. Because the whole idea is that you know, exposing the dog to a lifestyle.
But it's fulfillment. Definitely there is a level of I get more out of this than I even put into it. And that's wonderful.
Right.
Yeah.
This wouldn't be a conversation with puppy raisers, and you've alluded to a couple of stories and situations, but I'm afraid I have to ask you each to share quickly one or two of your best or your funniest stories of raising puppies, particularly the puppy raising that you're doing for Guide Dogs. And they can be naughty dogs. I hear that.
Those are two very different things. Those are two very different things. Those are two different conversations.
Yes. And this is going to go out in public. So just do bear that in mind. But yeah, one or two of your favorite stories, the funniest stories.
Okay. So let me start with one of them, which was fairly recently, actually. I don't know why. I think I'd been sick. So I hadn't taken Rico out shopping for a while. I took him off to Woolies in Lakeside because I thought, right, this is it. Jacket on, and he's got such a puppy brain. He dives into his jacket, and he's like, oh yes, let's go. But he's quite wiry as a dog. He's big. He's not a small puppy. He's quite a big dog. So his tail tends to lash everything and everyone, and his little body wiggles all over the place because he's so excited to be out working. So we get into Woolies. And oh my goodness, that nose is everywhere. He's sniffing this and sniffing that. And of course, they're not allowed to do that in Woolies. Well, he managed, in the space of being in Woolies for half an hour, to sniff the basket and, excuse me, but the crotch of every single person he came across. I was like, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. My dog is not supposed to do that. Yeah. So I spent a lot of time apologizing.
Wendy.
I think one of my favorite moments had to be at Dances with Dogs, but the first time, so with Alva, because I was fairly new to puppy raising And for me, I actually got quite emotional. Alva was tiny. So we had Alva, Echo, and Ebony at that stage, three tiny little pups. They were literally still in arms. And we went backstage, and they were taken into arms by these beautiful, cute men. Rico's just kissed Tanya in the face like a big lick. And these beautiful dancers, and you know, dancers have got these magnificent physiques, and they were literally ballet dancers. So they were in tights with these beautiful bodies with these tiny little puppies, a white one, a yellow one, and a chocolate one. And they literally took these puppies and plied off onto the stage. And you could actually physically hear the audience go, oh, and you didn't know if it was about the men in tights or the baby puppies or both. But it was such an amazing experience. They literally did a dance with these puppies in arms and then danced off the stage, gave them back to us, and we took our babies home because they were that little. But it was such a beautiful, wonderful, fun-filled, you know, and those are the sort of things that you – well, that I will always, each one has, you know, fun times. But that was big for me because it was sort of the first, one of the first ones of many.
Mm. I remember taking Milan to a concert at the Baxter. It was beautiful, and it was all choral, lots of voices. It was Milan. And we'd sat sort of at the back right-hand side. Milan decided that he wasn't there just to listen. He was actually there because he was part of the show. He was going to sing. So from the back right-hand corner, every time anybody started to sing, I heard from my puppy. And I thought, oh, no, please don't let anybody else be able to hear this. And at the end of the concert, I went up to the guys. We were kind of mingling with the people who'd been on stage. And I said, oh, that was wonderful. Thank you very much. And he looked at Milan and he went, oh, he said, a whole load of stuff makes sense. Was this the high C at the back right-hand corner of the auditorium? I was like, oh, my goodness, you heard him.
I also do you remember taking Milan to see Shrek when he'd done very well. He did the whole of the first and the second act. By the third act, he was getting a little bit edgy, and Keith thought it would be a good idea to give him his water bottle, and he went going right through the third act. It was like, that was not a good idea.
So as a final question, what advice would you have for someone who's engaging with this and is going, you know, maybe I should take up puppy raising? What advice would you offer to that?
What advice? Just do it. Yeah. Just do it.
Any advice on how or what they should avoid, or
don't have expensive furniture.
Yeah.
And roll up your carpets for the first 6 months.
Yeah. And consider what time of the year you put your hand up. Because you spend a lot of time outside watching a tiniest little puppy sniffing the ground. And so it's so much nicer in spring and summer.
Says the voice of experience right now. I would echo that with Wendy, is just do it. It's such an amazing space of being able to give back and learn. You will never look at your dogs the same way, and you will never treat them the same way again, because you have got a whole different set of skills in terms of training them. There's a lot less that you put up with, but you have a far better training system, because guide dogs train around positive reinforcement. So you don't smack the dogs. In fact, you're not even supposed to say no to them. Needless to say, I'm afraid that one, I try very hard with that one. Let's put it that way. Not always successfully. So it's just do it. It will introduce you to a world that is completely different from anything you've known in any other way. If you have the vague inkling of, I think I might be interested. We need puppy raisers, particularly in Joburg, but even in Cape Town. Get hold of guide dogs. Tell them you want to be a puppy raiser, and they will help you fill in the forms. But it is It's one of the best things I've ever done.
I have to say, I agree. And some of the best people I've ever met, and some of the bravest people I've ever met, and some of the most interesting people I've ever met have all come around this time since I started raising guide dogs for someone else. And you know what? I have to say that if there's one thing that I've heard, if I've heard it once, I probably hear it on average once a week. How can you just give it away? And it's, you know, you have to understand that we are not giving away anything. This puppy was never ours in the first place. This puppy actually belongs to SA Guide Dogs until it is handed to its owner. So it's not yours. It's not yours. It's like when you rent a house. How can you just move out of that house? Well, it wasn't yours in the first place. It's just a temporary accommodation, and this puppy is just temporarily yours. But he's got bigger job to do than being a loved pet. And if you just, there's nothing wrong with being a loved pet, but it's not, that's not why we do it. If you want a loved pet, get another Labrador. There's Labrador Rescue, by the way, is full. But there's plenty of Labbies that you can love. This one is on temporary loan to you, unless your name's Yasmin.
And enjoy it.
But just love it. But just love it because it's just so much bigger. It's about seeing the bigger picture. So I never look at it as giving away my dog. It's not mine. I'm not giving it away. I'm raising it for somebody else to lead a purposeful life. That's what it is.
Can I just add something as well in terms of the advice to anybody wanting to do this? I would also say you don't have to do more than one dog. You can just do one. And you can walk away from the program at being changed forever inside of yourself, but you don't have to do it again if you don't want to. And that's the beauty of it. You decide what works for you. And if you then decide, I can't do one for another year because I'm traveling or I'm this or I'm whatever, don't. Then it's a beautifully flexible organization in terms of that. You will do it because you will change. And you will grow.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Wendy Purden, Tanya Robertson. Thank you both for sharing your experiences, some of your stories. And thank you too to Rico and to Caleb for popping in to at least visit us on this call as well. And we hope you managed to get the CD back from Caleb, Wendy.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We'd love to connect with you. So find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook, Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Yasi. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.